I like teaching other people real stuff because there's a whole lot of not real stuff being taught. So I'm like, what if there was somebody out there who interviewed people and didn't just let them pitch their crap, actually said, teach us something we can use that you've gained is wisdom in your life, and then hold their feet to the frickin' fire.
You're listening to Pubcast Worldwide.
Greetings, thirsty listeners, and welcome to this episode of Pubcast Worldwide, the podcast where we have alcohol-infused conversations with the world's most interesting people over beers, cocktails, and other libations at the coolest pubs, bars, and breweries on the planet. I'm your host, Chris Lukey, a recent convert to Filipino cuisine and someone that's always down to connect over a beverage. And connection is what today's show is all about. We are joined by Jordan Harbinger on this episode, a master networker and host of the top-rated podcast, The Jordan Harbinger Show. If this is the first time you're hearing about Jordan, I'll just reveal my biases up front that Jordan, in my opinion, is one of the best podcasters around. And I'm not just saying that because he was down to jump on this show, but because I've never met another podcaster that prepares so thoroughly for his interviews and takes his craft as seriously as he does. The end result is a truly standout show where he methodically dissects the best practices of some of the world's most successful individuals by asking them questions no one has ever asked before, and quite frankly does a great job of diving into their purpose and passions by doing so. Not to mention, he does this in a way that makes every episode super actionable. From guys like restaurant business expert and bar rescue host John Taffer, I know we have some listeners that know him here on the show, to Reading Rainbow host LeVar Burton. That guy's a frickin' legend. Jordan's reach really is limitless, and the amount of fascinating people he's interviewed is literally in the thousands. Anyway, I'll be hyping up Jordan again as this episode gets rolling, but in the meantime, here are three things you can expect from today's episode. First, since Jordan is a master of connection and relationship building, we have some fun with this in the context of the pubcast. We discuss some of these tips using the scenario of a cocktail hour and how to have more meaningful conversations with people you've just met. Second, toward the latter half of the show, we get into networking tips. Now, the whole debunking of the traditional definition of networking came up here a few shows back in episode 56 with Wes Hoffman. This time around, Jordan will again help us redefine what networking means while discussing some of his specific tactics he uses to connect with people and give without the expectation of anything in return, as he likes to describe it. Jordan's got some personal examples as to how these tactics work in practice, and those stories tend to keep getting better the further we get into our beers. Speaking of drinking, third, you're going to hear some other stories from Jordan that you don't normally get to hear. From drinking stories at home to close calls abroad, Jordan's got plenty of tales to keep you entertained during this episode. Now that you know what to expect, before we get rolling, I want to make sure I mention Jordan's 6-minute networking course. This is something that you can find at jordanharbinger.com/course. 6-minute networking is a 30-day free course where Jordan goes through 12 practical exercises designed to strengthen your networking acumen, some of which we're going to dive into in this episode. That said, we name off a lot of good tips and resources throughout this episode, and if you want to get to 6-minute networking and everything else we talk about on this episode, make sure you visit our show notes at pubcastworldwide.com/59. That's pubcastworldwide.com/59 for episode 59. And now for today's venue. Jordan and I had been planning out this episode for a while, and long ago I knew he wanted to meet up at Tapsalog Bistro in Campbell, California, right outside of San Jose. This is one of the best Filipino restaurants I've ever been to. From what I understand, Tapsalog stands for tapas with eggs, so like spicy meat, pork, beef, whatever that is, with eggs and rice in its most basic sense. Throw in some lumpia spring rolls and ube ice cream. Ube is like a purple yam from the Philippines, which is awesome in ice cream form, and you've got yourself quite the meal. Long story short, this nondescript strip mall joint has some top-notch cuisine, and it's worth the trip. A big thank you in advance to Uncle Ed and the gang over at Tapsalog Bistro for hosting us. Great time, and their Filipino lagers definitely fueled this conversation. Speaking of which, let's get this episode rolling. While we might not be heading to the beaches of the Philippines, we're about to be heading to the closest thing you'll find here in the States. Let's head towards San Jose, California to Tapsalog Bistro to meet up with Jordan Harbinger.
Grab a beer! Grab a stein!
Jordan, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
Cheers.
Cheers. I'm drinking this too fast, I see.
You'll be okay. We have a break for, you know, around two, so don't you worry. Mm. So the first question I got to ask is, where are we and what are we drinking?
Yeah, this is, first of all, I'm going to answer your question in a second. I love this idea for our show because this is like everything people like doing in a lot, that you can film.
Sure.
And not... with a special license in one place.
Right. Yeah, I think I'll go with that. I mean, that's the comparison I've gotten before is comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah, that. I wasn't going to bring another brand into it, but since you did.
It's okay. Fine. It's not the worst thing to be associated with. Right. And I hadn't actually watched it before I started the show, but nevertheless a good concept. So
right now where we are is we are at Tapsalog Bistro, which is, it sounds foreign because it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I want to say the number, it's one of the best... and not just hyperbole, but like judged the best Filipinos restaurants in America. It's like one, two, or three. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care because it's right outside my house. And that, to me, makes it number one.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. I scouted it out last week because I was curious because you recommended this way in advance. I think you did. Yeah.
Okay.
It was you or Jen.
It probably was my wife.
Okay.
She's
all right. Jen might have done that. Yeah. But nevertheless, great recommendation. I've gotten to sample some of it. And you are drinking a rather strong beer off the bat.
This is Red Horse.
Yeah.
Is that? So this, I've had about half of it and... I'm not on an empty stomach, and I feel a little bit. I'm feeling it.
All right. Well, we'll take it slow enough for you. We don't want to. I used to call the second half of the show the tipsy talk. We might bring that back for you today,
depending on
where you get to.
Yeah, so. I will probably go with a lighter load.
Well, the San Miguel is what I'm drinking right now, which I understand is like one of your trademark, maybe even the flagship Filipino beer. I'm not an expert in Filipino beer.
If you go to the Philippines, you will see San Miguel everything on the side of a bus. A random flag, T-shirts.
Okay.
It's everywhere.
Have you been before, I take it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hot, just like it is inside here right now.
Yes. It's not too bad inside. We are in San Jose, California. We should highlight that, too.
Yeah,
Campbell, technically.
It's 88 outside, and it's 86 in here.
And my car and air conditioner is broken this week,
nice.
So I try to time that pretty well.
Mm.
Well, before we get too far, I want to make sure we give you a proper intro
for
all our guests that might not know you yet. So... our guest today is an expert, connector, and one of the OGs of the podcasting world. In his more than decade-long career in podcasting, he's interviewed literally thousands of the world's sharpest individuals in pretty much any industry you can imagine. From legendary musicians like Moby to former Google CEO Eric Schmidt, he's deconstructed the playbooks and best practices of these folks and everyone in between. Not to mention he's been a leading consultant and trainer on social capital and relationship building to some of the world's biggest companies, as well as every branch of the military. Ladies and gentlemen, here's interviewer extraordinaire and connoisseur of connection, Jordan Harbinger.
Nice. That was a good intro.
Yeah, thank you. I was wondering if that would
it's like
would
a take on the bio, but not my bio verbatim.
I tried to pull in some clever, you know, alliteration in there as well.
No, I like the connoisseur. I was like, ooh, what's gonna what am I a connoisseur of? You know, that's always the question, because that could have gone anywhere.
I was really looking for something that just went with connection, and connoisseur was the best.
Like,
best
what am I going to be able to back up with that high praise?
Well, what we can back it up with is you are the host of the Jordan Harbinger Show, which was one of the number one new shows on iTunes
that's
in 2018.
Right. That's right.
And if you're looking for Jordan, you can find him at jordanharbinger.com, or you can find his show wherever you get your podcasts, or on social media, Jordan Harbinger at Twitter and Instagram. It's good to have you here, and with that intro, you know, I want to get some background, so we set the stage for some of the things we're going to talk about today. So, as I've mentioned, you've been producing podcasts consistently for a long time, and you've had no shortage of fascinating experiences before that. If I remember right, you've taught English as a second language before podcasting. You were a lawyer on Wall Street.
Yes.
But what was it about, like, connection nonverbal communication and relationship building that made you say, I'm going to double down on this?
You know, that's interesting. I originally became a lawyer. I didn't know what else to do with myself, which is not a good reason to go to grad school.
Sure.
And when I was in, let's say, high school, I was one of those kids who's like, oh, I don't care. I'm just going to take the geometry test and, like, wing it. And it would be, like, B plus, A minus, because it's, you know, geometry, and you can kind of figure it out. But then I got to college, and I was like, oh, everyone's smarter than me or as smart, you know, and I'm screwed. My competitive advantage of being, like, the nerdy kid who could just, like, wing it and then go home and play Nintendo, those days are over. Luckily, in college, everyone was just drinking a lot, like we're doing right now, but times 100.
Right,
and
right.
And so I would just, my bar then was I can outwork everyone by basically just showing up to class and doing the homework, and I'm good, right, and study. And that was my competitive advantage. However, when I got to Wall Street, those were both gone. Everyone was a nerd who worked their ass off and was already really smart. So I thought, I'm going to get fired. It's only a matter of time. Now I know that that's imposter syndrome, but back then it seemed very real to me that I was like the one guy who somehow slipped through the cracks, shouldn't have been hired, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, if I work from home, they won't know that I'm a crappy employee or lawyer, and then it'll take them longer to fire me. But by that time, maybe I'll have ramped up enough to have kind of made myself useful.
Interesting strategy.
So I was trying to buy myself more time. And so I asked one of the attorneys that hired me how come he was never in the office, even though he was a partner and one of the youngest partners. And I thought, he must be working from home, and I got to figure out how to work from home. So I saw him once in the office, and I said, what's the deal? Do you just work from home, or you know, how come you're never here? And he said, I work from home sometimes, but I also bring in a lot of business for the firm. And I thought, wait a second, what does that mean? He's like, well, you know, I generate deals, and how do you do this? So I ask him, and he goes, you know, you got to make network connections and put yourself out there. And I was like, this is not actionable advice at all. But I was onto something. It changed the way that I look at work forever, because I thought, okay, if I can learn how to bring in deals / network or whatever the hell he's talking about, then I won't get fired, and maybe I'll become a partner, because he doesn't barely do anything.
Yeah.
From my perspective, he just hangs out. Because he was explaining his job, and he's like, yeah, I go to golf and jiu-jitsu, and I go on a cruise, and I go to this charity thing. And he's like, I bill 10% of the hours that these other guys do. And I was like, wait a minute. So you get paid more, you work less. I got to get a handle on this networking thing.
Yeah.
So I started taking courses on networking, like Dale Carnegie classes. And turns out a guy in a sweater vest who works at the YMCA is not going to be the one who tells you how to be charismatic and impressive.
Yes, fair point.
So, yeah, unfortunately. So what I then did was started dissecting these little bits of psychology.
Okay.
Like, okay, well, what makes somebody really charismatic? Oh, well, they're funny. All right, I got to study comedy.
Okay.
Well, that's just not it. There's plenty of comedians that are funny but aren't, like, attractive or have really good connections. So what do I do? Oh, well, those guys are also very, like, masculine or something. So then I like overcompensated, and I was all like, yeah, alpha bro, and funny. But that didn't work either. And so I started studying all these little different ingredients, and it was like, all right, there's subtle, nuanced nonverbal communication, persuasion, influence, verbal tics that you can get rid of, things like that, that I can sand down, if you will. And those are the elements of charisma. Those are the elements of getting people to know, like, and trust you. Then when you have those elements in place, you can start reaching out and helping other people and generating connections. And then at that point, I was talking about this stuff so much that I was doing that a lot more than I was paying attention to my legal stuff. And I started a podcast. That started to get popular. People started to hire me for those exact skills that we were just talking about. And then I went, screw this law thing. I hate it. And the economy's doing one of these. And my business is doing one of these. So
for those listening, that was a down and an up.
Good point. I'm looking at the camera.
It's okay.
So a bit, the economy's going down. It's like 2007 at this point. And my business is going up, because not that podcasts were popular or had advertising, but people were calling and going, hey, can I fly you to California and you teach my mortgage bank all this stuff? And I'd be like, I guess so. And he's like, how much do you charge? And I'm like, let me get back to you on that. And then he's like, let me stop you right there. You've probably never done this. I'm going to give you 10 grand. And I'm like, cool. And then I got there, and he goes, lesson number one, you should have charged me like 50 grand for this. And I'm like, damn it. Right. But I started to build that business. And that is what actually ended up making me go, this has legs. This is a real business.
Right.
Not like some weird hobby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an Instagrammer at that point. Instagram didn't exist. But
exactly.
It wasn't like that scale. It was mm-hmm. companies were hiring me, individuals were hiring me, and it was a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah. Well, that's a hugely important part. But one of the things that I find interesting about that is I think a lot of people assume, you know, that it's that natural charisma or a natural something that makes you good at networking and nonverbal cues and things like that. But you really talked about how you dissected that. I mean, and it didn't, like, was that coming natural to you in any sort
no.
of way? Or was that, okay, so that was all
no,
learned.
No. So certain, what's funny is certain things did come naturally to me,
okay.
but it wasn't that. So what comes naturally to me is I used to be kind of like a system hacker, kind of social engineer mm-hmm. type person. So I would figure out things like phone systems or programming a cell phone or like wiretapping and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff came really naturally to me, and I was really into that geeky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the social stuff didn't come naturally to me. Surprise,
sure.
surprise, the kid who sat at home disassembling cell phones wasn't the most popular kid in school. But I always did have a knack for going, huh, why do all the guys and girls tell me things that are personal? And I wouldn't really understand why, but I would ask my mom, why do girls tell me their problems? Why do guys tell me their problems? Why
mm-hmm.
why am I the only one that knows Matt's parents are getting divorced and Matt's not even really my friend? Like, what's
mm-hmm.
going on? And she'd say, oh, well, they trust you, and maybe it's because you're a good listener. And I'm like, I don't know if I agree with all that.
Mm-hmm.
So that I always had something that got people to open up to me,
mm-hmm.
but that was just this little germ of a skill set. It wasn't anything
sure.
I thought to improve.
Right.
Later on, I mixed and matched my social engineering hacking, system hacking. I don't mean computer hacking.
Mm-hmm.
I do kind of, but I mean mm-hmm. like thinking about holes in phone systems and like getting or convincing somebody to give me access to
yeah.
something.
That hacker mentality
yeah.
is transferable to social situations, whatever
right.
it is.
So taking that and then adding in the elements of charisma, attraction,
mm-hmm.
whatever you want to call it, that was like gasoline on that fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that became really interesting. And now it's funny because now law firms will hire me to go and teach their lawyers how to network. And I'm like, that's so funny. I almost
yeah.
got fired for networking too much at my old job because it wasn't my job. I was a second year associate.
I feel like irony often leads to what you're meant to do in the long run.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Well, the reason I bring this up is, you know, one thing that at least I've taken as one of the base levels of the things you teach and the things you talk about on your podcast or on other podcasts you've been on, I feel like you've built a lot of what you do around, like, helping people build better genuine interactions or asking better questions or just being a better communicator
yeah.
in general. You know, this is a drinking show. We got a lot of beer drinkers, cocktail fans on the show, so I want to paint a little picture, and I want you to give an example of how people can get started on some of these tactics. So let's say we're hanging out at, like, a bottle share in Palo Alto, or we're downtown in Paper Plane in San Jose drinking some cocktails at a friend's birthday party. You're around a lot of people that you don't know that you're just meeting for the first time or something. How would you recommend someone get started on building more genuine interactions in a scenario like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so it all is context dependent,
mm-hmm.
but in a situation like that, let's say I walk in and it's your birthday party and I only know you, but
yeah.
you're what you don't want to do is what everybody else does, is go up and only try to talk to you for the 3-hour
sure.
event, because
mm-hmm.
you're going to be like, hey, mix around. Like,
yeah.
I'm happy to talk to you for 20 minutes, but
right.
be
make
social.
Some friends.
Make some friends. So what I would do is come in, greet you, of course, because you're the host,
mm-hmm.
and then I would say, who should I meet? And then that's your cue to be like, oh, hey, this is my friend Jordan. You should probably do that anyway, but, you know, most people, if they're busy, they might be like, oh, yeah, go grab a beer, and you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
That may or may not be someone's style. They're like, crap, I'm an introvert. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
I might say, who should I meet? And you go, oh, and you'll probably just turn to the first person that's near you and say, oh, this is Tom. He works with me.
Sure.
And this Carpenter, he's my video guy for my show.
Yeah.
And I'll go, oh, right on. What's your show about? And so then what I should do is start talking with them. I can include you, but I should also give you a chance to make an escape because you're probably like, I got to go get ice. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'll talk to him. But instead of being that guy who goes, okay, I know someone, now I'm going to corner him,
mm-hmm.
keep your conversation open. And what I mean by that is don't close off. Like, if he's up against a wall, don't, like, stand there
yeah.
and talk to them. Make sure that your postures are both open.
Yeah.
This sounds obvious to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
but really isn't. In fact,
mm-hmm.
if you notice yourself doing this a lot, you'll realize, oh, my gosh, I probably do this all the time more
mm-hmm.
than I know. Once you get
mm-hmm.
awareness around this. So
right.
what you can do is in fact, having direct-facing conversations, so if
mm-hmm.
you're right in front of me, that's a little bit more intense than I think a lot of people want in a first interaction or the first
mm-hmm.
few minutes of an interaction. And yet that's what a lot of us do, especially if we're a little bit green.
Yeah.
So you want to stand almost at a 45-degree angle
yeah.
to somebody.
Yep.
That will open up the conversation, too. So if someone walks by you, you can say, hey, man. Like, mm-hmm. you can literally just catch their attention that way, catch their eye. They might smile or whatever. Or mm-hmm. or if it's a woman, obviously, you could still say, hey, man, I guess it's 2019. Right? And you can bring them into the conversation, and then you have this sort of 3 or 4-way conversation going.
Right.
What a lot of people do is they try to talk to one person at a time, and mm-hmm. it ends up being too intense.
Sure.
Other people will stand around with their drink in the middle of their chest and be like, okay, I got to go talk to some other people. What do I say? I'm not sure. Oh, crap. Do I look weird right now? Totally look weird right now. Oh, man. I bet people are looking at me and they're thinking, this is weird. Okay, I need to, like, walk around. Let me find the bathroom. I don't really have to go to the bathroom.
You
but
do
I'm
a really great scenario anyway. Of a social panic,
yeah,
a
yeah.
panic attack.
Oh, I'm used to these, right?
Yeah.
So I know it well, too well. And I would say for the most part, look, if you're looking around and the whole room is a bunch of circles of people talking, mm-hmm. instead of walking up, this is a very common mistake that people mm-hmm. make. Instead of walking up behind people, someone, and waiting until mm-hmm. they open up,
mm-hmm.
that makes you look, we say lowers your social value, but really it just looks kind of, the translation is you look kind of dorky standing behind someone,
right.
and they don't know you're there, and other mm-hmm. people are like, oh, there's like a guy behind you, but I don't want to interrupt you.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is you can put the back of your hand on someone's arm, or you can actually put your fingertips on someone's shoulder. It's mm-hmm. not creepy. The way that you do it is up high. So you don't on a female, generally don't touch above the elbow mm-hmm. if you don't know them, because, well, for one thing, if you miss, it's super
right.
awkward.
Right, I hear
but
you
But also,
that.
If there's, like, sleeveless dresses and yeah. like creepy guys can do that sometimes.
Right.
So keep it below the elbow if mm-hmm. you don't know them. That's just a general rule of thumb. It's very professional.
Mm-hmm.
And that will get their attention. I mean, just the back of your hand. You're not swatting them. You're literally just sort of doing one of these. And if you have a drink, you can kind of mm-hmm. walk up and mm-hmm. you can lead with your drink, I call it, where mm-hmm. your hand might be in the middle, where their eyes catch it. And then they'll look over, and they will naturally open up their posture to you.
You kind of
you.
Put an object in there
right.
that says, I'm going to be part of this
yeah,
conversation.
Yeah, and if you don't have a drink, you can literally just sort of slide your hand in there slowly. Not super slowly. That'd be weird. But I routinely open up conversation by going like this. I do this on my show, too. I'll put my hand out in front of me.
Yeah.
Now you know I want to talk
right.
if you're talking.
Yeah.
But I don't have to go, ha, right? And I don't have to do anything dramatic. I can literally just do this, and it catches your eyes, and you go, uh-huh. oh, I'm going to open up to this person.
Mm-hmm.
If people are standing around, they will physically turn towards mm-hmm. you. That's when you can walk in and go, hey, guys, what's going on? And you can just introduce yourself. It's mm-hmm. really that simple, but I know that introducing yourself sounds harder,
yeah.
and it is if no one's looking at you, because then you're just going, hey, guys? Sorry.
Yeah.
Then you're just like, I hate myself. Please yeah. smash a bottle on my head and call an ambulance.
Well, one thing, tell me if I'm doing this right. Like you mentioned being standing at a 45-degree angle. If I'm in that scenario where I'm the guy that doesn't know a ton of people, I'm looking for that conversation where there's like, oh, it looks like there should be 3 people in this circle right now,
yeah.
but there are only 2.
Yeah, or 4.
4, what,
5,
whatever.
It doesn't matter. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, you can break into any conversation. And I would say don't worry about it. The mm-hmm. only time you shouldn't is if the people are making really close eye contact
mm-hmm.
or are leaning in really close to one another, because there's a level of intensity there that is probably between 2 close friends that are talking about something serious.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
On the other hand, if the person looks cornered and trapped and they're looking around the person that's talking with them,
yeah.
they probably want to be rescued. And I've mm-hmm. back when I was single, that was like my jam.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're looking.
Yeah,
it's you're looking for the someone that needs some help.
Right. That was my jam. In fact, my buddy Tim, shout out to the Harringtons, met his wife doing this because we were out one
Kudos.
Night. We were out late, and there were like 4 people in the bar besides us. And he goes, "Oh man, that girl over there is really pretty, but she's with those 2 guys." And I would turn around, I was like, "She's not with those guys. They're actually she's
yeah.
scared of those guys."
Yeah.
She was leaning against a bar, and there was like 1 here and 1 here, and she was just trapped.
Yeah.
Right. 1 on her left, 1 on her right. She was just trapped. And I said, go walk up to her and just introduce yourself or start talking. But
yeah.
she can't wait to talk to you. When he walked up, she goes, hey, honey, I was wondering where you were, and then ran towards him. And he was like, wow, Jordan stuff really works. And I
yeah.
was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Nice.
I felt pretty badass about that.
I would have too.
You know, ellipsis, now they have 2 kids.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, kudos to you on being a matchmaker as well. So, okay, so in this scenario, we've worked our way into the conversation.
Yeah.
We put our whiskey sour right into the, say, hey, I want to be part of this discussion. What do you say to avoid the typical, you know, where are you from? What do you do for work?
Yeah. This is called the plunging stone. We named it. Isn't that creative and clever?
Go into that a bit more.
Yeah, so it's really a stupid name for a really easy technique. We want to ask first about, well, typically most conversations start with facts, mm-hmm. right? So it's where are you from? What do you do for work? The reason that that's boring is just what you said. It's kind of cliche and mundane. Mm-hmm. Most people are sharing facts. Nobody's really going to be excited about facts. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm from Northern California. I work at an accounting firm.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Unless I have some sort of feeling or emotion attached to that fact, it's not going to mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're like, oh, I'm an accountant too. Okay, if we have a commonality, you feel an affinity, that's an emotion. So we all start with facts,
mm-hmm.
but we want to move quickly to emotions. So if somebody mm-hmm. says, oh, I'm from Northern California and I'm an accountant, I might go, oh, What do you like about accounting? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, actually, I was always really good at math, and I'm really comfortable with it, and I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could help people because I know a lot of people aren't good at math? And you go, okay, mm-hmm. so there's an emotion attached to that.
Right.
And if you read really deeply into that, that person likes helping other people, and mm-hmm. they like using their strengths to help other people where those people might be weak, right? So you can really read into that person's personality mm-hmm. by going for the emotion behind the fact. You got right. the fact, where they're mm-hmm. from, what they do. Now mm-hmm. you've got a little bit of the emotion. Well, I like it because da, da, da. They didn't say it makes me feel joy. You can infer that.
Right.
But you get the reasoning behind the emotions. And then the why is what I kind of just mentioned after that, which is, well, you know, I've always been good at math, and I want to use things that I'm good at to help people with something that they might not be good at. Okay, mm-hmm. so they might have a strong sense of, I don't know, justice, they're value-giving, they like being helpful to other people. Then you say, oh, okay, well, what gets you out of bed every day aside from the paycheck?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I really love my coworkers. They're a lot of fun, and also we do a lot of pro bono work at my firm. Oh, what mm-hmm. does that mean? Well, we do the accounting for, I don't know, an orphanage and a charity mm-hmm. for reformed prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
That is someone's why. That is a right. real conversation. That person's going to feel like they had a great time talking with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to understand them at a much deeper level, much, much deeper level
mm-hmm.
than somebody who goes, oh, that's Angela. She's from Northern California and she's an accountant. She has three dogs, right? Like you
right.
need to dig. That's why. So it's FEW, facts, emotions, and why. That's the plunging stone.
Okay.
Right. It's sort of a depth curve.
Mm-hmm.
Most people stop at facts and then they just swirl around in the cesspool of fact-based talk, and it's boring.
Yeah.
It's where are you from? What do you do? Cool. Do you like it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess. Cool. Is that where you grew up? Cool. Right? That's a typical mm-hmm. conversation. And everyone's just like, I want to go get another drink now. See ya.
Yeah.
Don't follow me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's not a good win.
Mm-hmm.
FEW is what gets rapport. That's what gets people's rapport generated with you. That's what makes people know, like, trust you, etc. over time.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
How does one develop that habit then? How do they get better at doing that?
Obviously, it's just practice,
just
right?
Practice.
But like,
okay.
keep the FEW thing in mind. It's not mm-hmm. complicated. It's literally always, almost always the same questions.
Okay.
So where are you from? What do you do is fine. You can start with that. You can start with any fact you want.
Mm-hmm.
The emotion part is, what do you like about? That's an easy one, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are other emotion questions, but like, this is the easy one and the most common one. And why isn't some like, ooh, I got to be a ninja and think about why they like this.
Mm-hmm.
The way I get it is, well, what gets you out of bed for that every day besides
yeah.
the paycheck? That sounds like the emotion question, but it's much deeper.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense.
He's like, is that okay? I'm like, it is a blender.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah.
I would rather have a blender in the background so people know that we're not just doing this in some studio.
Yeah,
so.
These aren't extras.
Well, I want to take this to another level because we've kind of, in my mind, we've taken some of the basics about making connections in a scenario where, you know, you're around people at this point. But let's say we're going to use a word that most people hate, networking.
You know,
you're trying to nurture your connections proactively in a sense. Let's redefine the word networking a little bit. Why do people hate it, and what is networking?
The reason
really?
People hate it is, and rightfully so, is if I'm at a networking mixer, which is usually a giant waste of time.
Yes.
I will show up to this thing, drive halfway across town, mm-hmm. pay for parking,
mm-hmm.
show up. There's a guy in a $80 suit that doesn't mm-hmm. fit quite right and a bunch of folding chairs, and he's like, have a stale cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit down in your chair, and everyone goes around and introduces themselves.
Yeah.
And as soon as that part's over, 700 financial planners and literal used car salesmen or, you know, whatever kind of like Herbalife salespeople come up and give
MLMs,
you their,
yep.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
they give you their crappy ass card.
Mm-hmm.
and you go, wow, I'm not only am I not going to meet anybody that can help me with anything, everybody mm-hmm. here wants something from me. Mm-hmm. This is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what networking is to most people, slinging business cards in people's faces, making sure that you collect as many, and then you get home, and of course they add you to their stupid-ass newsletter.
Sure.
Right? So that's what MLM is to a lot of people. Or sorry, mm-hmm. MLM. That's what networking is. It's
right.
funny.
I mean, they
not
kind
too far away.
It's
to a lot of people. And I hate that. I'm uh-huh. more relationship development. And my core principle is give without the expectation or attachment to anything in return.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone that I'm meeting, I'm trying to leave it better than I found it, essentially. And I'm mm-hmm. trying to make sure that they get something regardless of whether or not I get something in return.
Mm-hmm.
So if I meet someone and they're a graphic designer, and then later on I meet somebody and they are a web designer, I might say, oh, who does all your graphics? Well, we subcontract and we have freelancers. You know that guy right there is a graphic designer. Do you want to go meet him? I was just talking mm-hmm. with him. Yeah, sure. We're always looking for good designers because every designer has their own aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Right. I don't get anything out of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get social capital out of that in mm-hmm. that they're both like, that Jordan guy was pretty cool. Looked out for me on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But every so often, for every, and even maybe 90 times out of 100, you never get anything other than goodwill out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But once or 10 times out of 100, mm-hmm. I haven't done the math on this, but it's
sure.
low.
Right.
Somebody will go, hey, Jordan, you may not remember me. You introduced me to this person. Anyway, I started working with them on a project, and now we have a business, and we were wondering if you wanted us to do our thing that we do here for you for free because we owe you one, and hell, would you give us a testimonial? Sure. Mm-hmm. So then I end up with like a free, I don't know, whatever, decorating mm-hmm. my kitchen. Who cares, right? But I get
nice little perk.
I get a little thing out of it.
Yeah.
And what at scale, this is really useful because mm-hmm. what happens is, for example, I'll get a call randomly from somebody that goes, hey, are you doing speaking? And I'll go, yeah, I haven't talked to you in a long time. What's up? And they'll go, yeah, I remember you introduced me to this person. Well, I got the job because of that. I'm in charge of picking our keynote speaker for our national sales meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Our budget's not huge. It's only 20 grand. But would you fly to Fiji and speak to our whatever? And I've gotten opportunities like that. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's because I introduced somebody to somebody else that I didn't even know that well 3 years ago. And now they work there and they've got mm-hmm. an opportunity. And I'm the first person they thought of because the whole time they're thinking, I owe this guy one.
Hmm.
Why not throw him this one?
And is that a true story or is that like
that
an example based
story?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't Fiji, but
sure.
Yeah.
What's the one of the most recent ones that comes to mind that where that paid off?
Yeah. Okay, here's one. So my neighbor in law school hit me up out of the blue and he goes, "Would you consider talking to my friend? I know you're a really busy guy, but would you consider talking to my friend? He's thinking about moving to Los Angeles." This is when mm-hmm. I lived in LA.
Yeah.
And I said, "Sure, yeah, why not?" So I took a phone call from this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to move to L.A., and I really want to work in, like, entertainment or something. Where should I live? Where should I stay away from? How much money do I need for rent? And I basically just told him all these things, and I was like, hey, look, if you run into deep doo-doo, give me a call. You can, like, crash on my couch for a couple days, whatever.
Yeah.
He never ended up doing that. One day, though, I walked into a network, which is like a network of shows, like a television network.
Okay, yeah.
And it was radio network, actually, digital radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear like, oh, sorry, we're really busy. And then I hear, Jordan, hey, yeah, hold on. I'm going to put you on Rodney's calendar. And mm-hmm. I was like, cool, guy that I've never heard of in my whole life, because this is like 3 years later, 2 years
mm-hmm.
later.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do I know you? And he goes, yeah, oh, I forgot. Yeah, so anyway, like 2-3 years ago, I called you before I moved to L.A., and mm-hmm. you kind of like told me where to live. And then you told me to network with these people, and that's how I got this job. And I went, oh, okay,
mm-hmm.
wow. Great to meet you.
Yeah.
So he got me on this other person's calendar, and then later on down the line, he got me a gig with a company, and then later on, I ended up getting him a job with another company. So it's like you end up just throwing these things back and forth to people.
Yeah.
This is a guy I thought I would never even meet in real life or ever see.
Sure.
Now I work with him routinely,
yeah.
and he's like, Jordan's the guy who got me out here. I owe him one. Like, he's always, always hooked me up because I took a freaking phone call 9 years ago.
I'm curious, is it scenarios like that that make up your why of why you keep doing what you've done? Because you've been doing this for over a decade. You've got a lot of skills. You could take another course in life and do other things. What is it that makes you keep doing these type
of
things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like doing the interviews on the Jordan Harbinger show. You know, I like teaching people things. I like learning things myself, of course. So that's really my why is mostly 50% selfish, right? It's like I like learning things. I like having these conversations. The other half is I like teaching other people real stuff because there's a whole lot of not real stuff being taught around here. Like you go to school and you're like, I'm prepared for the world. Not true. Or you take some dumb internet marketers mastermind course for $20,000.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to learn how to run a business. Not true. So I'm like, what if there was somebody out there who interviewed people and didn't just let them pitch their crap, didn't just let them talk about their new TV show or their new movie, actually said, teach us something we can use that you've gained as wisdom in your life, and then hold their feet to the frickin' fire. You know, when I had Shaquille O'Neal on, he was like, what you want to talk about? You want to talk about basketball? Like all this stuff. And I was like, no, I don't want to talk about basketball, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't really ask if I want to talk about basketball, but he's like, what do you want to talk about? And of course he expected me to be like, the 98 championship.
He thought he was showing up for the typical interview.
Right. And I was like, how do you make decisions? One of the questions that I asked him that even he mentioned to his manager recently was good because the manager just talked to me a couple months ago. And I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm trying to give you an example of like, why
no,
I do
great.
What I do.
Keep rolling.
What I asked was, how do you make decisions because everyone that you talk to, pretty much everyone, wants something from you, right? They want to make money off of you, your name. Some people are going to take advantage of you. Some people are going to rob you. How do you know who you can trust? Because it's really hard. If you're deciding on your own, you don't know who to trust when you're that famous. It's impossible. I don't care how good your like gut instincts are. Someone's going to come after you and try to scam you. And he said, oh, well, actually, I have a panel. I call it my panel. It's my I'm making this up now, but I think it's like his mom, his uncle, his manager, one of his high school football basketball coaches, his lawyer, and his accountant or something like that. And I said, why that? And he goes, if my accountant wants me to do something because it's good for him, my lawyer will figure it out and stop him. If my accountant and my lawyer want me to do something that's good for them, my mom will come in and be like, you're not going to like doing
that. Awesome system of checks and balances.
And if my manager and my lawyer and my accountant want me to do something, but my mom and uncle say, you're going to hate every minute of that, I don't do it. Because they know him, collectively, they know him better than he knows himself.
Sure.
That's true for every person.
That's a really interesting way to create that personal board of 100%. Directors.
Imagine this. Like, are you married?
No, I'm not.
No. When you get married, there will be, and right now it's probably like your parents or something, but when you get married, if you're anything like me, your wife will go, I don't think you're going to like that. And when she says that, you should listen because she is for sure correct. Everything that I've done that my wife told me not to do, I always go, you were right. This sucks. And every time she's like, you should do that. And I'm like, but I don't want to. She's like, trust me, you're going to feel bad if you don't. And I go, do it. I always go, I'm so glad I went and did that. And she's like, I know. Because she knows me. She knows me in a different way than I know myself, right? Her plus, let's say, my mom plus my best friends, I would never argue with that group of people. That's how Shaq makes decisions. But it's not just, let me run this by you, mom. It's they convene. They go to a nice restaurant. And they go, here are all the opportunities I have on the table the next 2-3 months, whatever it is.
Yeah.
What do you all think of this? And then the lawyer will ask certain questions. Well, this might interfere with our deal with such and such. The manager goes, actually, I checked that out and da-da-da. And the accountant will go, oh, but the cash flow from this is lower than the cash flow from that. You're going to make more doing this. And then his mom goes, but the lower pay thing, you're going to love that. The other one, you're going to hate that. That's how he makes decisions. And I thought, this is freaking genius.
Have you replicated that yet? Or is
I have that, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I mean, something similar. Like, I have, like, my attorney. I have my wife, of course.
Yeah.
I have my close friends, and I have my parents and things like that. Any real important decision, I tend to run by all those people. I don't necessarily fly them out here and have a meal.
Sure, yeah.
But I routinely have meetings with people that I care about, and I'm like, what about this? And usually it's them talking me out of something.
Yeah.
But that's good.
Wow.
Because I've my whole life has been people talking me into stuff, and it's gotten me, you know, I regret a lot of
it. Well, you're at the point where you need to say no to plenty of
things. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, wow, that's some game-changing advice. I think that's a good, and more importantly than anything, your drink is gone.
I know.
Right
I was
now.
Just
so going
to say, when is this round two?
I feel like we need to, we've gotten some good advice, whether it's marriage-related, networking-related, just interacting at a social event. We've gotten some good tips from Jordan Harbinger so far, so we're going to be right back with round two in just a moment.
This episode of Pubcast Worldwide is sponsored by Tortuga Backpacks. We might not be traveling to the Philippines for this episode, but if we were, you can bet I'd be taking my Tortuga backpack with me. Tortuga Backpacks is a boutique travel luggage company with stylish bags for the urban adventurer. I always bring my Tortuga Outbreaker bag with me wherever I go, whether that's on a business trip or a jaunt around Europe. It is the max size for a carry-on piece of luggage for the headroom above your seat, so super helpful in that capacity. I'm able to max it out. If you're looking for a great carry-on bag for your next trip, look no further than Tortuga Backpacks. And since you are a listener of this show, don't forget to use the code PUBCAST at checkout to get 10% off your order. And if you do want to learn more, make sure to head back way earlier in our catalog to episode 2 for our conversation with their co-founder, Fred Parada, about some of his wine-infused calamities in Australia. Thanks to our other sponsor for this episode, Beer Cap Maps. Now, you've heard me talk about beer cap maps on this show. If you want to find them, go to beercapmaps.com. But their name is exactly what it sounds like. They do wooden cutouts of states and countries where you can collect and display your bottle caps. They also do bottle cap related games, just a ton of great accessories over there for the beer lover in your life. I use it as my go-to gift for weddings and birthdays if I know someone is a big fan of beer. Again, that's beercapmaps.com, and we've got a checkout code for those guys as well. Save 10% off your order using the code BREWSLETTER, B-R-E-W-S, letter, at checkout. And coincidentally, if you want to learn more about these guys, you can head back to episode 5, where we interviewed their co-founders in Madison, Wisconsin. Again, that is beercapmaps.com. Now, let's get back to our interview with Jordan Harbinger.
So what? I think it's like 4:55. How are you doing on on time?
Anytime you do a show, anytime you do a show called the Pubcast, you don't plan shit after this.
No, I dig that. That might be the new tagline for my guests on the show. Thank you. I'm glad I hit record.
Now
for
my
that.
Calendar says go for a long walk and or nap. That's what I have after this.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. So we're back for round 2. Cheers. Good to be back. This. Yeah, you're doing an IPA now, right?
Yeah, and I will tell you. That last one I had, that Red Horse, was no joke.
That is what I'm having right now.
It's tasty, but it will drop you.
Yeah.
It doesn't play.
Well, I'm ready to be dropped after this. I am bringing back the Tipsy Talk today. We haven't called the Tipsy Talk for round 2 in a while, but I feel like that's where we're going to be in just a few minutes. So back for round 2, I want to get a little more into networking before we wrap up. But the only appropriate way to start round 2 is with the drinking story from our guests.
Oh, my God. I got so many, unfortunately.
I'm going to ask for your top drinking story, then, that you're willing to share.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are – ooh, it's a hard choice. One that makes me look really bad or one that's just really, really unusual and interesting.
We might have time for both.
Okay. It's tough. Okay, so the first one – is I went to North Korea, and I used to run tours in North Korea. I don't know if you knew that from your prep.
It's interesting what you'll find when you search Jordan Harbinger North Korea online. Yeah. You have like a whole genre of podcasts just for North Korea.
Yeah, and like photographs of that other people have taken and tagged me in and stuff like that. So we were in North Korea on one of the tours, and there was a French girl, and we went outside because a bunch of people were up there French, so they were smoking. And you can smoke in any hotel, but... Okay. I don't know why we went out. Actually, now I don't even know why we went outside. You can smoke anywhere in North Korea.
Okay.
And we ended up going outside.
You just wanted some sun. I don't know.
It was nighttime.
Yeah.
It's a drinking story. Well, I guess you don't only drink during the night, but yeah.
Sure.
We were wasted. As in North Korea, you get wasted every night. It's just that's what they do. They really want you to drink.
Really?
I don't really know why. I think it's one of the only things to do. They're very proud of their alcohol there.
What's
a drinking culture?
There's not
kind
really
of.
A bar scene there. Oh,
there's
is
no
there,
there's no scene of anything.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
The tourist hotel that you're allowed to stay in is on an island, and people call it Alcatraz because it's on an island for a reason. It's not that it's scenic.
Yeah.
It's that you can't get out and local people can't get in. And so there's a bridge, but it's got a military or police checkpoint. I mean, nobody's getting in and out randomly. You can't do that. But anyway, we went outside the hotel, not off the grounds, but just outside the building.
Uh-huh.
And this French girl was, like, rolling a cigarette, and then she smoked it, and then she goes, do you guys want to smoke a joint? And I went, hell no. I don't want to be anywhere near you guys when you get caught smoking weed in North effing Korea.
I live in California. Why would I risk everything here?
Oh, my God. Hell no. So I've never run so far away from marijuana in my life. No, I ran in the hotel. And here's the thing. You can't tell anyone and go, hey, they're smoking a J out there. You better go stop them. You just want no attention on it at all. You don't want to know anything about it at all.
Sure.
I just was like, you know what's funny? I walked past all the places where I knew they had video cameras. And I was like, I'm going to walk past that camera so that if they get caught after this, they can be like, oh, he left. And I go, check the footage. I was gone. Because I was like, I do not want to go to a labor camp for smoking some crappy-ass French weed.
Wow. That was a good story. What was the other one you wanted to share?
The other one's a little better. It's just not as interesting. It's not as unusual.
All right.
So a long time ago. At least that's what I'm going to tell you right now because it's embarrassing.
Right.
I was at my buddy's wedding from law school.
Okay.
And this whole trip started off poorly.
Mm-hmm.
We were late to the wedding, which is bad form. And when we walked into the church, it was really, really disruptive. Like, loud, open the door, sun's shining into the church.
Sure.
They're up there, like, doing their frickin' or about to do their frickin' vows.
Literally everyone knows you just
everyone,
showed up.
It was like a movie. We opened the door, and everyone turns around and goes, what are you doing? Like, get in here. So we walk in, and we're halfway up the row looking for a place to sit, and an usher's trying to get people to move over when we realize that wasn't our friend's wedding.
Oh, my gosh.
So we quietly run out. And at this point, though, everyone's laughing because they realize what happened.
Yeah.
And, like, even the priest is, like, laughing.
That's
the bride
good.
And groom are laughing. That's just the beginning of this trip, okay?
Okay, all right.
We have the after party. We're going out. It's, like, a reunion of people from law school. I'm very, like, I'm all over it, dancing with my friend's wife and, like, spinning everybody around, having a blast, a blast. And my friends who drove me there, they left. They had to go to bed early. And I'm like, I'm going to stay for a little while. So I stay. And I'm like pretty damn drunk at this point. So I go, all right, I need to go. We close this place down. I got to get out of here. So I go, shoot, where did they park? Where did my friends park? And I'm like, oh, I must be walking distance from their place. So I start walking around Georgetown. Thankfully, it is Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Not a bad area. Fine. Then I'm like, this isn't it. So I go back to the parking structure at the hotel where the party was, and I'm like, dang, okay, their car's still here. Drunk logic, right?
You're right.
I'm going to lay on the trunk of the car. And if I lay on the trunk of the car, then when they come, because I was going to, like, just sit down. I'm like, no, they might leave without me. They might not see me. And then I was like, oh, I'll sit behind the car. Then I was like, no, they might not see me. They might run me over and I'll die. I was like, if I lay on the car, they'll have to find me.
Right.
And they walk to the car.
Good drunk. I mean, great drunk logic.
Decent.
Yeah.
So the whole parking lot is pretty full of cars, like the structure. I lay on the car, and then, I don't know, like 7 hours later, 6 hours later, I wake up and I'm like, dang, man, I am probably still drunk, definitely hungover, don't feel good, scraped up my shoe because I remember I kind of fell. That's how drunk I was. Like, I fell. All right. Again, this is a long time ago. And I look around and I go, man, my friends aren't here. And then I go, entire parking garage completely empty. So what happened was, whoever that was, by the way, I think you might have caught this. Didn't you say your friends left earlier? Yeah, they left 3 hours earlier. They left.
Yeah.
That was not their car. So I'm imagining now somebody came out from whatever event that was or whatever time it was or whatever morning thing or wherever these people who lived in that building go to get their car. Someone walked out and probably went, nope, and then, like, had to take this freaking taxi to work because or they tried to wake me up and I was not having it.
Yeah,
and they were like, nah. So
I'm surprised they didn't just try to move you.
They might have.
That's a fair point. You don't know.
Think about this. If you're like a 65-year-old lady and you see my drunk ass laying on your trunk, do you go, I'm going to wake this fool up and tell him what's what? No, you run back in the house. I'm lucky the cops didn't come.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
true.
And so I get up and I call my friend and I'm just like, hey, man, I'm outside. And he goes, that's fine. Just knock on the door and hangs up. And I call him back. No answer, no answer, no answer. Seventh time. No, man. I'm like, I'm just generally outside.
Yeah.
I don't know where outside. I am just in general outdoors.
Yeah.
And it took a while for me to get
I
home.
Really thought the Shaq answer was going to be the highlight of this interview, but that might have just replaced it.
Yeah, yeah. That's a dumbass drunk story.
Man, I feel like we're on a roll. I had a constructive question for you, and I want to ask it before this red horse starts hitting me. But I've got one more question. While we're on the misadventures of Jordan Harbinger right now, you've interviewed thousands of people. What's one interview calamity that's happened along the way as well that most people don't know?
I should have thought of this. Let me think. There's got to be some.
Mm-hmm. If you can mix it in with a drunk story, even better.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no,
I don't think that's the case.
Of course.
I feel like you're a little more prepared than that for your interviews.
Definitely. However, before the show, we talked about, this is probably almost 12 years ago now.
Sure.
The early days of my show.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been preparing for this interview for a while. This guy came in from California. I lived in New York at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the whole show. And not only did I forget to press record, I thought, you know what? That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I have a backup.
Mm-hmm.
It's right here. And I pull out this microphone, and the cord is attached to absolutely nothing.
You didn't see the levels going up and down? You weren't looking for that?
Clearly was not checking the backup, no.
Sure.
Well, the thing was, I was doing it at Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and mm-hmm. I was the producer of the show, so I was running the board at that time. And that was kind of, but yes, that was a drinking story because I thought, I can totally do this after drinking, I don't know, 3, 4, whatever teen shots of vodka and Monster energy drink or whatever you drink when you're like 27.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you can't. No, you can't do it. I don't care who you are. Can't do it.
Liquid courage makes you think some wonderful things, as we've just demonstrated in the past couple questions. Well, before I've got a couple more stories I'm looking to get
to. Yeah.
Before we get to that, you have a course out called 6 Minute Networking. And we've talked about some networking tips.
5 Minute Networking was taken, so.
Oh, so
6 Minute Networking now.
Why 6 Minute Networking of all things?
Well, 5 Minute Networking was taken.
Okay.
It literally was. There's nothing there, but 6 Minute Networking.
I was trying to think, it's like, these tasks don't necessarily take 6 minutes, but 6 Minute Networking,
they should take like 4.
Okay.
But 4 Minute Networking sounds dumb.
Yeah, it sounds like you're cheating the system.
Right.
Anything below 5 is
Yeah, I agree. I was like, I can't go less than 5. I got to go higher than 5. And nobody wants to do 10-minute networking.
That's fair.
That sounds like too much time. You're supposed to eat, and it's also a long time.
I think
time.
You really hit it with 6.
6, I think, is the perfect balance.
Anyway, so the point of this whole thing is 6-minute networking. You have a lot of really good, what I would call entry-level networking tips for people. We talked about it a little bit in round one, but one of the things I love about what you encourage is text messages to your, what is it you call it, your forgotten network, your lost network a little bit?
So your weak and dormant ties.
Your weak and dormant ties,
that's what
it was. This is why we should have done this during round one.
No, it's all good.
Describe what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Describe
so what this is like people, common objection I get from people when I'm teaching them relationship development and things like that in 6 minute networking or outside of it, they go, I don't really have a lot of people that I know, so I can't do this one drill where one of the drills I have is you open up your phone and you go, I'll do it for the camera, but most people won't be able to see.
That's fair.
But like,
you've provided a disclaimer. So
I open up the text message app. And then I scroll all the way to the bottom.
Sure.
And at the bottom, it's like, look, I might not go all the way, but I usually do.
Yeah.
And then down at the bottom here is like, September 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked to that guy in a while. And I'll send this little script to them that's like, hey, how are you? It's Jordan. I haven't talked to you. Jordan Harbinger. I haven't talked to you forever.
Mm-hmm.
What's the latest? My end. I had a kid. It's amazing being a father. I forgot if you have kids. Anyway, let me know what you're up to. I'd love to help out with anything possible and or pick your brain for dad advice or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And guys will be like, oh, my God, it's been so long. What's up, man? Good to hear from you. Show me a picture of your kid. So I'm reengaging these weak and dormant ties.
Mm-hmm.
What most people say is, I don't know that many people. But you really do.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't think about them because you can tell we're at a pub now, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, you'll hear
this beer is working and it ain't us.
Yeah.
You do know that many people. So I have something called layoff lifelines. And what this exercise is you put down the 10 or 15 people that you really, you know damn well you should have stayed in touch with, but you done screwed up and you let it go. So, and this happens to everyone. This is like, oh man, this is my faculty advisor when I went to university and did my master's degree. Oh, this is that boss I had. They were awesome. But, you know, I got that new job and I haven't really talked to them since then. Or, oh, you know what? My buddy's aunt growing up, she ran a farm and she knew everything about gardening. And I used to go there and like hang out with her chickens. Like, what's she doing? Those are your weaker and dormant ties. You just don't think about them because they can't help you with whatever like project or goal. What you think they can't help you with whatever project or goal you're looking at in the moment. So I reconnect with one of those people every single day. And
literally every day.
Every single day.
Okay.
And sometimes two.
Okay.
And so I recommend doing it with four people when you start because you're going to have hundreds of people in your text messaging app, for example. But so I call it Connect Four.
Okay.
But also because Connect Four. And there's no Connect One.
Connect Four is good branding.
Yeah, it's good branding.
People know what that is.
Right. So I do it with one or two people a day.
Yeah.
And it's great because I will routinely text someone and they'll go, oh my God, it's been so long. I can't believe it. What are you up to? I fill them in and they go, oh man, we got to catch up soon. I got to go. I'm getting on a plane. Whatever.
Yeah.
A month later, that same person, with some regularity, that same person, one out of 10 times will do this. Hey, Jordan, good talking with you the other day. I just checked out your podcast. Would you be interested in, and no pressure if you're not, talking with my friend? They were kidnapped by Al-Qaeda and escaped. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a great show.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, cool. I'll introduce you right now.
Yeah.
The last speaking gig I got, not at Podcast Movement, but before that, like a corporate gig, was somebody who I texted and then 3 weeks later, I think I talked about this earlier in the show, reached back out and said, hey, random, do you still do speaking? Because I'm walking into our sales meeting and we need a keynote speaker. And it's not a super high budget thing, but it would be, you know, 15 grand and it's in Hawaii. And I'm like, well, in that case, and the reason isn't because they were never going to think of me for this.
Sure.
I happened to be top of mind because I randomly texted them because of this drill. That's why.
Totally makes sense.
It makes sense, and it's so true. You have a lot more connections than you think. You're just looking for, right now I'm trying to look for somebody who can help me fix my car, or, like, I need a new job.
Yeah.
If you can't help me get a new job, then you're dead to me. That's not what you want. You want everybody being like, hey, man, what are you doing? Oh, you're looking for this? Cool. Or they might come back and go, oh, man, you know, bad timing, my graphic design business is shot. Three of my designers quit. I'm just like drowning. And I go, oh, well, I know tons of designers. Do you want intros? Oh my God, I would love intros.
Yeah.
Now I'm introducing them to people to close that gap. And they're like, you're a lifesaver. Let me know if I can ever do anything for you.
Yeah.
That's how I find random opportunity to build social capital with people that I've never talked to for 3 years.
For sure. It's such a great tip. And it's so easy too. And one of the reasons I brought that up specifically is I know you're famous for preparing for a very long time for your interviews. You put like 10 to 20 hours of work into an interview, if I remember right. And knowing that I was having you on the show, I'm like, if I'm going to have Jordan on the show, I want to check out this six minute networking.
That's that red horse talking.
It is the red horse talking. You weren't kidding. That thing is strong.
I know. It smacks you in the face. Hard.
I've got a variation on what you do. I send like postcards. I try to send a postcard a day. It really doesn't end up being that way.
That's cool.
It's because it's the same as a text message. It's about the same amount, but it's a good way to reconnect with someone that, one, you need to know their mailing address. But nevertheless, it's similar to that. But I wanted to try your text messaging trick, and I've done it in the past. Shame on me. I've never developed it into a habit yet. But I've had so much fun doing that this past week. And I think another fun way to do it is if you go in your Facebook messages, too, because sometimes you have, like, a little more context to how you met that person.
Yeah, Facebook is – a lot of people go, I delete all my texts. And I'm like, what is it, 1998 and you have a Nokia? Like, why are you doing that? But then, yeah, I would say use LinkedIn or Facebook. And then those same people usually go, I don't have Facebook. And I'm like, gah, come on.
I would really regret not having Facebook right now because I went back. I wanted to go back far. I wanted to see how well this works.
How far can you go back on those messages?
I went back to 2010 when I was backpacking around Europe.
God.
When I was backpacking around Europe in 2010, I'm just like, I want to go as deep as I can.
Do you mind if I kind of try this right
now?
Do
it. Yeah,
I'm not
do it
send
for sure.
Message,
I'll tell the story while you're giving it a shot.
When I
went back, I'm like, I found someone. I'm like, oh, my first thought was, it's like, oh, that's how I know that person. I'm Facebook friends with them, but I completely forgot how I know them. But I met them while I was backpacking around Europe. So I'm like, I'm going to take Jordan's script and be like, hey, you know, it's been a while. Wow, Europe was like 10 years ago. Great to, you know, hope to hear from you again. No rush. I know I'm butchering it right now because like 8%
no, you're good.
Red Horse.
I'm not judging. I'm just wondering how far. This is. I'm not going to do this because I realize now I get a lot of Facebook messages that I wasn't really thinking about. I'm not even on 2018 yet.
Yeah.
This is going to
You got to go deep. But I wanted to go as far as I could. And I'm like, I'm going to shoot this person a message just to try to do that reconnection. And they got back to me like, yeah, you know, I'm living in so-and-so right now. I'm working down in this country right now. I'm going to be back. I'm like, oh, I was just in, you know, this city leading a bar crawl recently. And they're like, oh, well, next time you're back, we should grab a beer. So, you know, nothing like you've brought up yet where it brings up like a new speaking opportunity or business opportunity.
Oh, it's a numbers game.
It's just a ton of fun to reconnect with someone. And you know what? The fact that you reconnected with that person versus the 99% of other people that have lost contact with them did that, all of a sudden you're in a position for maybe, you know, having a collaboration down the line, whatever it might be.
It's a numbers game, man. Mm-hmm. Like I do one a day or two a day, and out of those particular connections I'll get an opportunity once every week, maybe every couple days, most of which are not something I want to do.
Sure.
Right. But I'll tell you another way to do this, because Facebook tends to be a cluster F for some. I don't know what the rating is of your show.
Oh, we'll put explicit on this. You can call it a clusterfuck.
It's a clusterfuck for most people. What you can do, I used to do this until it turned into more work than it was worth. Every day, or every week, it's up to you, I used to go through my there's a birthday calendar on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Or at least there used to be. I haven't checked in a couple years. I think there still must be.
There still is, yeah.
And I would message everyone. When I was doing it weekly, I would just gather in new tabs everyone who had a birthday that week, and I'd go, hey, happy birthday. What are you going to do this year? What are you excited about? Here's what I'm did, and here's what I'm excited about. And I would send that message.
Good thing you can walk home from here.
I know, right? Yeah. I would never. This is irresponsible. And then I would send that message, and most people would reply.
Yeah.
And when I stopped doing that, friends of mine and people I barely knew would be like, yo, my birthday came and went.
Yeah.
What the hell, Jordan? Yeah. You are slacking.
I have a handful of friends that I'm like, they're going to give me a phone call or they're going to do something like something on my birthday. It's like it's interesting how I have that locked in my mind. And that's starting that exercise that we were talking about with the text messaging has made me pay more attention to that, because I was on Facebook on, I think it was yesterday morning, and I'm like, oh, this person's having a birthday today. I should send them a text messages versus just doing the typical happy birthday on Facebook comment.
And it's don't do anything. This is a tangent, but sending people that birthday thing that Facebook wants you to do, I call that below the fold, because that's one of those like when I post a picture of my son that I had 3 weeks ago, his name is Jaden, right?
Okay.
A lot of people liked it.
Of course.
I did not look at any of those people and thank them.
Right.
A lot of people commented. I replied to their comments. I don't remember who they are.
Yeah.
A lot of other people wrote me a nice email, sent me a text message. I remember those people. There were a lot, but I remember most of them. And then still fewer were like, what's your address? I'm going to send you something. But anytime somebody has big news, you want to stand out. You liking their status. You get married. Mm-hmm. Oh, like.
That's easy.
Don't do that. It's not doing anything.
It's no effort.
It's nothing. Yeah. A comment, nice of you, doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. If I see it online, the algorithm will tell me what your big news is, right? Like the algorithm will tell me, Chris Luke got married. Holy, that's awesome. I'm going to call him. You might not answer. I'm going to leave you a voicemail. Or I'll send you one of those voice notes. I'll send you a text. I'll send you a nice long email about how you deserve all these good things and your wife is lucky and all this great stuff. That's above the fold, because most people are taking the easy way. They're engaging with it in the same platform of social media. Mm-hmm. Instagram photo of you at your wedding, that means nothing to anyone. Comment, nothing to anyone. Reach around this medium of social media and take it offline. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, text messaging, calls, kind of still online.
Sure.
Email, definitely still online. But you know what I mean? Like, go above the fold. You will stand out. Only, 1% of people will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use the algorithm to find out people's big news because it's sifting for that. It's looking like, holy crap, you adopted a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Text me about it. Yeah. Don't like the picture.
Yeah.
Unless you don't care, right? That's one, if you just want to add to my like count, great.
Right.
Like the picture and then send them a text and say, look, you got a dog. That's awesome. Are you going to train him? What are you going to, like, what's the name? That's more meaningful, and that will make you stand out. And the algorithm's already doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
So just take the extra step of connecting offline, and you'll stand out. Besides, the stats on things like text messages, I think it's like 100% of them are read within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's not, of course, totally 100%. We've all seen that one friend of ours that has like 89 unreads, and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But we know that one person.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And I'm getting anxiety thinking about it.
They're
you.
An exception to the rule. They're not the norm.
Yeah. So, like, Jenny Blake, you have 189 unread texts. Come on. But most people, they read that right away, and they'll respond. Or they'll look at it never again. But no one responds to people who like their photo, and very few people respond to all the comments.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to go above the fold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Before we wrap up, whatever constructive advice we're still able to muster. I know I should just remember this because we've been doing the interview for a while, but this beer is something else.
This is something else.
What's one final piece of advice you'd want to leave the audience with that we haven't necessarily touched on yet around networking or connection?
I sort of mentioned this before, but I want to reiterate.
Sure.
You want to connect other people without the expectation of anything in return. So a lot of people go, well, I walked into this event and I'm looking for people who can join my sales team, but I didn't meet anyone.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm walking into an event and I'm looking for people who can join my sales team, then if I talk to you and you're like, oh, I have a great job doing graphic design, I'm like, damn it. Now I'm looking over your shoulder for someone else, and I'm not engaged in the conversation. And then you're like, that guy was weird, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm looking for what you can – not what you can do for me, but what you can do for anyone else in my network – now I have incentive to not only hear and understand what you do, but now I have incentive to connect you with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So don't look at what's in it for you. Don't have an expectation or attachment to anything in return.
Yep.
Help you connect with somebody so you can get what you want. They will get what they want. And then I have this tertiary, which is a really cool word, benefit of social capital coming my way. And now let's 9 out of 10 people might not be able to do anything for you. You'll just think that Jordan guy was nice. He connected us. He's a good a good egg, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But 1 in 10 will go, man, I owe you one. And they will eventually reciprocate. It might take freaking 3 years, but it doesn't matter because it doesn't cost you anything to introduce people. It only people think, oh, I don't have time for this. If you're a graphic designer, you don't have to give free graphic design to everyone. You're just plugging people into each other in your network.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do work. You just have to connect them. That's what makes it scalable. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it would be impossible. You'd help a bunch of people for free, and you'd have no money. You'd go broke.
Right.
You'd be homeless. This is scalable because I can send I can send 100 introductions a week, and I'm using, like, I don't know, an hour and a half of time, right? It's not a big deal.
Sure.
By the time you're sending more than one introduction per day, you have an assistant anyway.
Right. That makes sense.
Or 5 introductions a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try doing it once or twice or three times a week. It will be – it's Instagram time, man. You're freaking waiting for your coffee at Starbucks. You're not going to miss that time.
Yeah.
And if you start using apps on your phone like Text Expander that have shortcuts in it, where you can type in like, hi, name, and you replace that with like, hey, John, I really wanted to introduce you to – and then you're like – Michael, because he's really good at graphic design. And so I thought you two would really hit it off. And also, I know that you needed people who design graphics for your web business.
Right.
Let me know how this shakes out, Jordan. Send. It takes seconds.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's like the thing, like waiting at Phil's coffee, for example, just waiting for that to show up. Like, and I've got it in my Evernote right now. I've got the script and I customize it every time. It's like, oh, you went to one of my band shows way back in the day. Oh, we met in X country. Like, you can make those tweaks to it. It's not too hard.
Easily. And again, you will get so much benefit out of this because you can do 1,000 of them a year. Whereas if you were just helping people and then being like, gee, I hope I get something back from this and I don't feel screwed over. So that's, if I had one last piece, it would be don't keep score.
Yeah.
If I help you with something and you don't help me back, it's not everyone sucks.
Yeah.
Everyone's taking advantage of me.
Right.
F you, I'm not helping anyone again. It has nothing to do with any. Maybe you couldn't help me. Maybe mm-hmm. you are a selfish prick. I don't know. But
yeah,
it's probably a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't be a thing that I worry about. Because mm-hmm. being pissed like that and keeping score is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to get sick.
Sure.
Right. Like
it's a good analogy.
It screws up. Mm-hmm. It poisons your own well. It doesn't mm-hmm. screw up your relationships. It just makes. It's a covert contract, right? If I get pissed at you for not helping me, but you don't think you owed me anything, and then I'm being a dick to you because I think mm-hmm. you owe me something and you have no idea, that's a covert contract, right? It only exists in my head. Mm-hmm. So then you're like, man, that Jordan guy and I were cool, and now he's just like a weird, cold jerk.
Yeah.
Right? Now I screwed up my relationship with mm-hmm. you for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So help other people without the attachment or expectation of anything in return, and then if you don't help me back, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, I think the term I've heard you use before is ABG, always be giving versus always be closing.
Yeah, that's right.
And I dig that because I think it's – honestly, I don't know whether it's just because I'm like massively extroverted or not, but just practicing some of those things of just finding ways to reconnect, finding ways if I can add value has been an absolute blast.
Yeah, it's fun.
Weeks, so.
Right, because people are surprised by it because most people
exactly.
don't live by the ABG, always be generous, always be giving, whatever. They go – oh, well, that was nice of you. Mm-hmm. And then they're, like, a little suspicious at first. And then you keep doing it, and they're like, dang, this guy's just, like, a really good dude. He's, like, a one-in-a-thousand dude mm-hmm. that is super helpful. And I owe this guy something. I don't know if I can ever pay him back, but I owe mm-hmm. this guy something. At the very least, a red horse, right?
Yeah. This red... Boy, this red horse is something for a podcast interview.
You're getting, I hope you're going to walk it off a little.
Oh, no, that's the plan. Well, I'm going to eat here before I get out of here.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that.
This place has great food.
The Filipino food here is excellent. Like, this is a great spot from top to bottom. As we get out of here, is there anything you wish I would have asked you that I haven't yet?
Nah, you know, this is a really good interview, mostly because after two beers, I am just on fire. No, I'm either on fire or... burning down.
All right. All right.
Well, so
you don't look like you're burning down. No, you've been
great. I'm feeling good. I went to the gym before this, so I feel like I'm feeling pretty.
You earned it. That's what you did.
Yeah.
I have that mental. Like if I do a run or something like that, I'm just like, oh, I deserve this beer.
No.
I
want to leave with a compliment for you.
Okay.
This is a good format. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I was very skeptical because I thought background noise, and then I thought maybe it'll be empty. That didn't happen. It's still mm-hmm. not screwing up your vibe. You're a good interviewer. Mm-hmm. It's good format. It's very cool. Unique. I'm a little jealous that I don't do something similar, but this noise would drive me effing crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I'm sorry about the noise, man.
No, you're
totally
good at it.
I'm just saying, you could totally weave this into what you're doing, and you could call your episodes a pubcast. Like, there's
well,
no
apparently you can't trademark it.
Apparently you can't trademark it, yes. But nevertheless, that's water under the bridge at this point. So
you're under the bridge.
Jordan, thanks so much for being on the
show
today.
You got it, man. Thanks
Cheers.
For having me.
To those of you listening, we'll catch you again next time.
Hey, thanks for listening. This episode has been sponsored by Red Horse. Not really, but I'll certainly give it credit for adding a kick to this interview. A big thanks to Jordan for jumping on this episode. I hope you found him helpful as well as entertaining. And then I'd also like to extend a big hand of gratitude to Uncle Ed and the whole team over at Tapsalog for being such gracious hosts. You probably have already gathered this from this conversation, but we did film this episode. So if you want to see that, make sure you're subscribed to the Pubcast on YouTube or following us anywhere on social media to see some of that footage. Thanks so much for my buddy Carminder for putting that together. One more thanks to our actual sponsors for this episode, Beer Cap Maps, as well as Tortuga Backpacks. Again, we've got 10% discount codes for both of those folks, so if you're interested, beercapmaps.com, code BRUISELETTER, or Tortuga Backpacks, code PUBCAST, for 10% off your orders at checkout. Man, I've rattled off a lot of stuff today. So for access to all of the resources mentioned throughout the show, again, make sure to head to the show notes for this episode. That's pubcastworldwide.com/59. That's 5-9. There you can access Jordan's free 6-minute networking course as well. I highly recommend you check it out. Super practical. As I mentioned, I was going through that before jumping into this interview, and I think you'll have a lot of fun with it too. If you liked this episode, make sure to share this with friends or family. And if there's something you liked, tell us on social media. Remember, you can find Jordan on both Instagram and Twitter at Jordan Harbinger, all one word, as well as Pubcast Worldwide. If you leave a post or comment, make sure to tag us. We'd love to keep the conversation going there. That's it for now. We're heading to Montreal, Quebec next, so get ready for another interview abroad coming right up. Cheers!